Hey, Bill and Gut, and welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today as we broadcast via the YBS. And if you're listening inside this, outside of the Yidinji Territory, it's probably through the National Indigenous Radio Service, which is part of the Commonwealth of Australia. And we just wanted to say big thank you to our friends at Bumbabit Promedia 98.7 FM who have permission to be on our territory and to broadcast their programming. And we just wanted to say, how are you going? Wherever you are listening to this program, Gobara Galanyunda, may God's peace be upon you, as we say on this program quite regularly. And we do mean that. So I guess we've got Yirralum Ganyara in the office here, the studio, and we're going to talk about a number of things today. One of them is Waitangi Day, which is happened last week, but it is a day that the English signed a treaty with the Maori people of New Zealand. And we, every time this comes around this time, we usually talk about it and remind people that it's a very interesting document, because there's two things there. One, what is the obligation of both parties? Does the treaty exist still? And what about those who didn't sign the treaty? And we know that we have dealt personally with, they've been on the Yidinji Territory and visited us face to face, the people that describe themselves as Tangata Whenua, the people of the land. And they've set up their Hapu sovereign government, similar to the Yidinji model, and our flag flies on their territory at our embassy over there. So, Ganyara, Waitangi Day, very interesting.
Oh, look, it sure is. With Waitangi itself, they have a good look at who the parties are. Now, there was, like you correctly said there, it was between the original people who owned the place and the British. Not New Zealand, by the way, but in 2015, they commissioned a report, or was handed down in 2015. They said, yeah, the Treaty of Waitangi is very real. It was signed by a number of Indigenous nations in the Northern Ireland, nothing to do with the Southern Ireland, apparently. But it is very real. It was between the British and it was between the original people, nothing to do with New Zealand, which is the very reason why the New Zealand government are trying so hard to keep the Indigenous people, the original nations, inside New Zealand and not let them go back to, or they don't want them to go back to where they rightfully belong as the original owners of the place, who hadn't, by the way, with the treaties, ceded any sovereignty. There's only three clauses in that, and what it was to give the British a bit of a chance to be there and control its citizens, not the citizens of the original nations. It had nothing to do in the way of authority and power over them, because they still retained their sovereignty when they signed this treaty, which is a really interesting concept. But that's what's got to happen here. It's this, how the two worlds are going to coexist, you know, the two sovereignties, which is something Australia hasn't done. But in saying that, there was only three clauses to the treaty, which is a good way to keep it, very simple, very basic, and everyone knows what they're doing. The original people would have a British status, and not a New Zealand status, by the way. It would have had a British status attached to it, so that they could have travelled over to the UK there and got in through the British line. The people of the homeland of the UK got in through there, but not as New Zealanders now, which is rather strange at present, that the treaty is very real. If they want, and this is theoretical, and it is quite possible or plausible, that if they really want to, because the treaty is still binding, call upon the British to come down and protect them from the intrusion of the New Zealanders. And that was part of the treaty itself, was to offer protection to the original people. So in times of need, they could call upon the British to come down, or keep the foreigners away, keep them at bay so they don't interfere with the treaty itself, the British and the original people. What an interesting situation would it be if, a big if, that the original people called on the original Queen, you know, over there in the UK, not the constitutional Queen, but call upon the original monarch and say, look, we've got these New Zealanders here being a real pain in the neck to us. How about you send down some warships to protect us from New Zealanders? You know, they said the crown become divisible in about 1920, mid-20s, which is great. It could be divisible then to the British, but they would have had to renegotiate the treaty because both parties to the treaty weren't notified of this divisibility of the crown, you know, so the treaty would have been in jeopardy. But so it's still between the original British and still between the original owners of the place, the Indigenous nations, nothing to do with the New Zealanders. Why not keep them in New Zealand? Because that way you can acknowledge the existence of the treaty, and yet those New Zealanders of Indigenous heritage, those of heritage of the original people there, are still New Zealanders, just like Aboriginal Australians are still Australians. They've got nothing to do with the original land, the original title, the sovereignty that was never ceded. Australians are created under Australian law, New Zealanders are created under New Zealand law, and British citizens are created under British law. We've got to understand this part, but the original Indigenous people down there are not New Zealanders. They are under their own sovereignty that still exists. It's been acknowledged in that report in 2015 that it's still there, and they are still the owners of the place pursuant to that law.
So, Gunyar, are you saying that the New Zealanders, the New Zealand, what you're calling New Zealanders, are the equivalent of the Commonwealth of Australia in government?
They're exactly the same as Australians. So the New Zealanders are created. Yeah, the citizen, the New Zealander, is created pursuant to the ultimately to the Constitution of New Zealand and their Citizenship Act. But if they were British subjects, like as in the between the treaty and the original people, you know, if the New Zealanders were British or had British status, they would get in through the fast lane when they went over to the UK, when they moved in there across the border checkpoint. But they can't. They've got to go through the alien line. They're not British subjects. They've got no right. And so if you want to identify in New Zealand, you've got every right to it. You can participate in the life of the state, according to Article 5 of UNDRIP, or you can go and revitalise all your institutions in accord with the same article as Indigenous people who own the place. So it all depends on how you are seen legally. You're either seen as an Australian, a New Zealander or whatever, or you're seen as one of the Indigenous nations.
But the New Zealand government was created differently to what happened here in Australia, in the sense that there was no treaty here at all. So how is that point different over there, like the New Zealand government creation?
It's funny you mention that, because this is the fundamental problem here. How do we share power? The original treaty was the sharing of power and authority over a piece of land, you know, a geographical location, which was done between the British, by the way, and the original owners, the Maori or the Māori, whatever you want to call them. It was done there. Nothing to do with New Zealand. New Zealand wasn't even thought of it at that time. So this thing was created at a later date after the treaty, but the treaty is still a binding treaty between the two parties. The parties are British and the original owners, you know, the ones who didn't cede sovereignty. It's different from Australia. There's a treaty in place down there.
Well, in saying that, there's a group of people that didn't sign the treaty, and they're in exactly the same boat or position as the Yidinji Nation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what Yirilin was just saying there. What's different? It was only the Northern Ireland, by the way, the North Island, that had anything to do with the treaty. The Southern Island was excluded. There's actually a couple of tribes on the Northern Island that didn't participate as well. So it wasn't all the North Island. But it is. It's exactly the same situation. This thing called New Zealand come about later after the fact of the signing of the treaty. Australia hadn't even got anything, which is really strange. You know, they claim to be the sovereign authority here on the geographical location called Australia, yet every Indigenous nation has not ceded any authority or any sovereignty in part or in whole to the Commonwealth of Australia. It's just a claim at this stage, and a claim will remain until the fact is proven. And this is why Australia doesn't want the Indigenous nations to go back to where they rightfully belong. Just like down in New Zealand, they don't want the original tribes back down there, especially the Southern Island, because there is no treaty, there's nothing. And New Zealand is actually intruding upon their territory, on which, in the Northern Island, they could call upon the British to come down and defend them, their territorial nation and its territory from the New Zealanders. Now, if the British do not send the warships down at the request of the Indigenous people, the treaty's dead in the water. You know, it's over and done with. So what a predicament to be in.
So how you talk about the British handing over to Australia in 1901. Is that a similar creation to what happened with the New Zealand government?
Very similar. Australia, the British didn't hand over the geographical location until 1986, by the way. that was with the enactment of the Australia Act, Australia, 1986. They actually had to pass it over in the UK, 86, the Australia Act, 1986 UK, come out here. The Queen come out here as the Queen of Australia. And, you know, it got formal assent. And that was when the last vestiges of the colonial world were removed from the continental area, the geographical location known as Australia. So, but Australia, they were running two sets of books at the time. They had to be. There couldn't be anything else. Basically, in the states where there were governors and that, and this is what the issue was with the Australia Act, was to get rid of the powers of the governors at the time of the state. They had to take the colonies away, but they didn't. So they left the colonies here, but the people of the colonies agreed to federate under the Constitution of Australia 1901. So they're running two sets of books. They're running the Commonwealth of Australia. And if you to have a look at this, you go to the UK legislation website, download the Australian Constitution Act, which is Victoria 6364, if I can remember right, of 1900, and it is completely unamended to this very day. Yet the Australian Constitution 1901, with the kangaroo and the emu logo on the front, has been amended a number of times, you know, where they've ruled out certain paragraphs of it or certain sections, they've amended certain others. So there's two constitutions sitting there. One is the UK Act, which has nothing to do with Australia, and the other is the Australian one, which they've been running the people in. Little did the people realise that they were being seen legally as Australians, just like down in New Zealand. They walked out of the British status to become New Zealanders.
The existence of the coexisting sovereignties here, as Murrum said in one of the LinkedIn posts he put up, that they can't coexist.
Without a formal agreement, without a treaty, they can't coexist. This is what the idea of a treaty, like they've done down there in New Zealand, if you want to call it that, you know, those islands down there. The treaty was to share power and share authority. Who's going to be doing what in the two sovereign worlds that are going to exist? Now, the British had their sovereign authority, and they got they actually got permission to be there from those original people, which is why the treaty came about. And they, who was going to do what? The British weren't going to interfere with the rights of the indigenous people, their right to hunt, fish, make money, do whatever they got to do. So everyone knew where they stood. But Australia just moved into our house. Everywhere else they'd done treaties, everywhere else around the world, but they just moved into our house, sat on our couch for a while, but then they decided to take over the kitchen, they took over the toilet, they took over the bedrooms, they took over everything. And they put the poor old indigenous people, the Aboriginal, they got jammed into missions, which was sitting out on the veranda somewhere, you know, or actually out in the backyard, where it wasn't much good land. You couldn't even, you know, grow a feed upon it, you know. So the Australians just took over the house and everything in there. But they didn't get permission, no treaty, to say how these sovereignties were going to share power and authority. So in saying that, the Uluru Statement came out in 2017 and said the indigenous peoples have not ceded their authority and they are the true and correct owners of the place. Sovereignty was not ceded or extinguished. They couldn't extinguish it because there was no contract to extinguish. So their sovereignty is still here on this very land by the people who own the land, which is really dangerous for Australia. They don't own anything if the original tribes still own everything, which is the reason I got a funny feeling that Australia, the Commonwealth of Australia, are having problems with the Yidinji Nation and the Yidinji government. You know, the whole box and dice needs to be stopped, and they got to reassess what they're doing, the whole lot.
Yeah, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the country today, the Yidinji Territory. If you're listening outside the Yidinji Territory, it's via the National Indigenous Radio Service. We'll be back after the break.
I've been raising the streets that they don't know. Pull out police stretching knees for the popo. On top of me was the keys to the sideshow. Clown mob, zip off a run down, zip off a home. I'm supposed to be locked up with three cousins, but my open mind always set me free. Smuggled in some bubble time, watch out for the heat. They want us dead, multiply by three. Mabolabo, mabolabo, lay. Mabolabo, mabolabo, lay. Mapolapo, Mapolapo, lay, they want us dead, multiply by three. Mapolapo, Mapolapo, lay, Mapolapo, Mapolapo, lay, Mapolapo, Mapolapo, lay, they want us dead, multiply by three.
Being in the belly of the beast. Indeed, I did left to read, sleep. Release, I see, made him sleep. Three. Money, a piece of yours, got peace. Our death always contest. Better with the vest strap up our chest. Our death always complex. No niggas on us with no consent. Command, my word, none dead. We learn. Incarnation and what we face in exaggeration or formulation. I made a statement, I am a statement. I blood the pavement, me fate, no, never. Uncle dead and my auntie dead till my uncle spits this shit forever.
Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. They want us dead, multiply by three. Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. They want us dead, multiply by three.
Make some bread from writing in my black. I was on a mat. Find myself got attached. Had to get back. Get myself a bit and crash. Run up a cliff. Just to show how big I is. I made some rap. Off from putting in my black. I was on a mat. Find myself I got attached. Had to get back. Get myself a bit and crash. Run up a cliff. Just to show how big I is. I
Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. Mapo Lapo, Mapo Lapo, lay. They want us dead, want to fly by.
Yes, welcome back. There was an article in the ABC, we referred to it before, a couple of years ago now, by Bridget Judd, and it's a story about how Australia has one of the largest number of micronations in the world. The article goes on to talk about these places that I think Australians have just made up. So they've got this, the Commonwealth of Australia, State of New South Wales, Empire of Atlantium, Province of Aurora. The Empire of Atlantium is a parallel sovereign state based in New South Wales, boasting its own constitution, judicial system, flag and currency. Very interesting. There's also a number of things. The Hutt River Province, people probably heard of that one more than any other one. And the Hutt River Province the country, or the, Australia's oldest micronation, and it announced back then that it would be ceded back to the Commonwealth of Australia. So it belongs to Australia. It was created out of Australia. Hutt River claimed to be an independent sovereign state, though the Australian government never legally recognised it, and had been pursued by the Australian Tax Office. So if the ATO's chasing you down, you're an Australian. You are a fair dinkum, blue dinky die Aussie. And if you've got a micronation, chances are you are an Australian. And I just want to make sure the Empire of Atlantium, it's got its own constitution, it's pretty cool. A judicial system, you know, it's a bit Mickey Mouse, as I would describe it. Mickey Mouse, they've got their own postcards and things like that. Look, the same article, it's got this guy dressed up as some sort of English European king. With his royal garb on, you know, he's got bananas. It's a banana republic. He seceded from the Sydney suburb of Mossman. Congratulations, old mate. You're still an Australian. Now, very important, a constitutional lawyer by the name of George Williams. If you're talking about the Australia's top constitutional lawyers, he's either the first, the second, and nothing else. He's a very, very intelligent man. And in this article, he says Indigenous peoples have a claim to sovereignty. And guess what? There is a certain stamp that is featured in this article. It's the Yidinji stamp, of course. This is what George Williams says. Indigenous peoples have a claim to sovereignty, a claim to nationhood that predates the colonisation of Australia. Didn't the Federal Court of Australia say that the Yidinji Nation is a pre-1770 society? They were here when Cook was here, and they're still here today. Justice Dowsett, what a great Australian. What a great judicial officer. And he should be afforded the highest award possible in Australia for acknowledging such facts at law. Now, I'm not having a go here, but I am saying that the Yidinji Nation is not a micronation, and it's offensive to say such thing. I read it all the time on this internet, just like Israel in the Bible is a tribal nation, Yidinji is a tribal nation. God gave us language, God gave us this land, and we're still here today. So get over it. People calling us micronations or macronations or whatever it is, it really, really ticks me off. And I hope you're getting the message, whoever's writing these articles and saying that we're micronations. It's offensive. Get over it. So I think it's really important, Ganyara, to discuss the Imperium's eminence and dominion. This is the international world, the top lawyers in the world, the top constitutional lawyers, the judges, the highest legal officers in the world would agree that Yidinji Nation is a true a nation that is not part of the Commonwealth of Australia. It is the landowner, it has resources, and now it has a government.
Yeah, I can see you're getting a little bit excited there, and yeah, look, you're dead right. We're not a micronation; we are the original nation. That's a huge difference, by the way. Our land is extensive, not as big as some of the other Aboriginal nations who do have quite large land holdings, and I mean large, as in thousands of
Gamilaroi and all that.
Absolutely, we're talking thousands of square miles of country.
Compared to European nations, how big are they?
Well, when you look at the ones like, the little tiny European nations like Luxembourg, for example.
San Marino.
It's all these little tiny ones. Even the likes of when Hong Kong was under British rule, it was just an island. So Yidinji still has a considerable land holding compared to those other nations. But in saying that, the Uluru Statement from the Heart is the best one to prove that the Yidinji Nation is there, because they actually said the Aboriginal, the tribes, were the original sovereign nations of this continent. They've only been here roughly 60,000 years, not like
you.
Just by a day or two, we'll claim we're ahead of Australia. Been here for 60,000 years, have a sovereign ability. We have sovereignty was never ceded. We also have a sovereignty that's equal to that of the crown, of the Australian crown, because they said it coexists, sovereignty of the nations coexist with that of the crown. That's a big, big statement. It has to be at least equal to that of the Commonwealth of Australia. But the problem for Australia is we were first. Now, you mentioned these micronations. Forget about them. Hutt River, by the way, has collapsed. It's over and done with. They actually were... I think they were prosecuted or going through prosecution from the ATO just recently, and they said she's all over and done with. The problem with these micronations, they may want to break away from Australia, but they can't get into the gap between the Commonwealth of Australia in time and the original nations. That's called us, the Yidinji Nation. We were first in time by roughly 60,000 years.
Yeah, you can't jump the queues when you're doing this kind of stuff. You're either first or you're not. Second is the first loser, all right. I'm on the warpath here because I just wanted to say that we're not a micronation, and it's quite offensive actually, and especially to the Yidinji families and the societies here. You know, the genealogy and the bloodline goes way, way back. It was here before the Commonwealth of Australia, which is 1901. I would say that it's the micronation, or any other pretend fictitious legal entity is the micronation. At least the sovereign Yidinji government has its roots in customs and traditions that are pre-1770. It is the boss for the Yidinji nation at that level. And the tribes control, the tribe controls the government. Simple as that. Now, we're going to move on from that point, but I just thought I'd get that off my chest. Thank you very much. Now, there's a fantastic article, and it's in the Forecast News. It's I think it's in a sort of like a financial type of website, financial news website. Australian Aboriginal Sovereign Central Bank Digital Currency up and running. In a first for the country, the Sovereign Yidinji government in Australia has issued a CBDC with its first transaction occurring this week. The first transaction of the central bank digital currency took place on Tuesday in the Sovereign Yidinji government territory in the country's northeast. Now, we're not in Australia as such, but he's saying on the Australian continent, I believe. The Sovereign Yidinji government launched its central bank digital currency in partnership with blockchain wallet network Metamui last week to further its mission to establish a treaty with the Commonwealth of Australia. This is what Murumu said, apparently. This is a matter of survival for the Yidinji people. I did say that, actually. And it is really a positive development. We can now confidently start to map out our priorities, knowing that we will have the mechanism to procure and pay our way through our central bank. So it talks about here that the Yidinji people have lived on the territory for at least 60,000 years. I never wrote that. They did. Okay? Australia's constitution does not recognise any Aboriginal countries, which is true. It excluded the Yidinji nation. So that makes the Yidinji lands foreign to the Commonwealth. And until a treaty is reached, the Sovereign Yidinji government was formed in 2014 and goes on to say this, that and the other. And Article 4 of the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, says that Indigenous peoples have the right to means of financing their autonomous functions. Murumu said that blockchain technology can help such communities exercise their right to self-determination in virtually limitless ways. Look, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. The central bank is a massive gain for the Yidinji territory, a massive gain for the Yidinji people, a massive development for the government. And our central bank digital currency is there to interact with the rest of the world. Now, the Commonwealth of Australia treaty is vital for that because we want to protect the Commonwealth of Australia. But I think this is a wonderful achievement.
Oh, look, it sure is. People don't understand just what money is. They seem to think because it's got the word coin attached to it or whatever, cryptocurrency, you know, it's got currency attached, or Bitcoin, where, you know, they are not legitimate money, legal tender, units of account or whatever. They're just bartering items. And this is the important part.
Only in El Salvador.
Well, it's still something that's created by someone else, that someone's using as a mechanism to settle some debt. But in saying that, the US dollar is still preferential there in El Salvador. But in this one here, the Yidinji dollar, it is created under legislation where it is. You know, the Currency Act 2014 stipulates this is what you will settle debt with. This is what you'll pay your obligation with. This is what you'll use as a mechanism to cover your monetary obligations. And it is a Yidinji dollar. Simple as that. This is just the electronic version of it now. So it is a unit of account. It is a legal tender, by the way, in the Yidinji territory for the Yidinji nation. So if you wanted to buy a Yidinji postage stamp from our post office, you've got to come with a Yidinji dollar. You can't bring Aussie dollar in to get it. You can swap an Aussie dollar to get the, you know, as in a mechanism of exchange, like you go and change money from US dollars to Australian dollars or to yen or whatever, you have the same mechanism there to buy Yidinji dollars, to buy our postage stamp to put on your letter. So these are the sort of things that are there, but this now makes it so much easier bringing this digital currency into the world. And by the way, I think the Yidinji Nation has made a bit of a world first in that it's incorporated digital identity, you know, the self-sovereign identity, the digital currency from the central bank, the whole box and dice rolled into one. So I think we've trumped or, you know, got ahead of the I shouldn't use the word trumped because Donald, you know, might get upset, but we're actually leading the way with this.
Well, Bitcoin was first generation. They describe it as first generation. Ethereum is second generation. Our blockchain is fourth generation. That's recognised by the Digital European Association. That's recognised by Metamui itself making that bold claim. And we can see that in action. So it is way, way advanced. The Yidinji citizen can download the app and all that data stays in their account. It's not shared with anyone like Facebook or Google or anything like that. When you share your data, they collect and harvest all that information about you. This way, privacy is number one. There is a digitally burnt registration of any transaction, but the actual data that's involved with that is stored on the person's identity, which is on their phone or on a card. So it's pretty brilliant, I think. And it's one of those things that is going to change the world. It already has stirred up people in London and in Africa, and they're contacting the Yidinji government saying, this is fantastic.
Absolutely. It's amazing what's happened and how far it's going to support the continuation and growth of the sovereign Yidinji government and all of its citizens. So, yeah, it's a fantastic step.
And I think that when we're thinking about closing the gap, you mob, seriously look at going back to your law. Seriously look at looking at your government and setting up all these institutions, because every tribal nation has the right to do it. It doesn't matter if Australia signed under it or not. The very fact that they did is quite useful because it shows that they want to probably interact with the tribal nations, because this is a matter of it's going to happen. So all these things are, it's when it's going to happen. So all these tribal nations on this continent are slowly going to turn around and do what Yidinji's doing or follow another model, for example. And the Commonwealth of Australia is going to have to deal with that. What we're saying as a government and as a nation is that we want to protect Aussie. We want to protect the Aussie way of life. We want to protect Aussie businesses on the Yidinji territory, local family businesses, small businesses, you name it. That's going to have the protection of the Yidinji Nation. So I think it's a win-win for everybody. And one of the things that I can see, this is clear as crystal for us, is that it will close the gap. The Yidinji government will pay for its health and the Australian version of Centrelink and public service jobs and all that kind of stuff. It's going to happen. It's not going to happen like tomorrow, but obviously we are step by step, day by day, building these institutions. It's taken us a while to come this far, since 2013, 2012, when the elders back then could see probably something like this. They visioned that, you know, they had that vision of creating something that could look after all the Yidinji in the future. And that's coming to fruition right now in our lifetime. And that's very important. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, these things are, because Yidinji's done a majority of the heavy lifting, tribal nations, once they get their head around it, can really probably set this up in a couple of years. And that's our gift to you, Mop. Every victory for Yidinji is a victory for the Kuku Yalanji. It's a victory for the Arunda. It's a victory for the Wiradjuri. It's a victory for everyone on this continent that is going back to their tribal capacity. And, you know, we're not charging money for that. We give it for free because it's out of love that the Yidinji Nation wants to spread this type of information. We just got contacted by Indigenous peoples from the Middle East wanting to make connections with us. And they're wondering what we've done and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, this is what I love about this job, that as Foreign Minister you get to talk with these different nations and stuff. So I think it's important. You know, the Metamui technology wasn't born overnight. They worked on this for 25 years. You know, this is 25 years worth of work. This is everyone's blood, sweat and tears coming together to form this fantastic thing. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition. I'm talking a lot today, but we'll be back after the break. That's the whole point of the radio show, I guess. Anyway, we'll be back.
Listen now. Kobe Rap, MC Mux, Black Law Entertainment. My fly, yes, always red, black and yellow, yellow, yellow. Always was and always will be, but I'll always be rapping my country. My fly, yes, always red, black and yellow, yellow, yellow. Always was and always will be, but I'll always be rapping my country. It's red, black and yellow, yeah, that's my flag, bros. Hide it alive, but I'll raise my flag up. We about to come up in dozens of it and mad, but just because you done jail time, you think you bad, huh? It's kinda funny how some people lack. Looking like dummies, no knowledge is what you people lack. Aboriginals coming, so where my people lack? If we keep it 100, you can't compete with that. Stuff you gotta rap about is for my mum and dad. My daughter, my two sisters, and my pop and nan. My nieces and nephews, I can't stop at that. 11 brothers, different mothers, yeah, they've got my back. I've got a couple day oneers I've known since a young and real ones and never turned their back. Yeah, I love them now, it's time we crush them and show you what I'm about. From the east to the west, from the north to the south, that's my flag. Yeah, it's always red, black, and yellow, yellow, yellow. Always was and always will be, but I'll always be rapping my country, my flag. Yeah, it's always red, black, and yellow, yellow, yellow. Always was and always will be, but I'll always be rapping my country.
You brush the black, yeah. Talk up and get smacked down when my brother's up on his track. Now black is the color of my skin, the color of the night, the color of me in the wrong. Now I'm in the right. Yellow's what they call me, cause I got the lighter skin. But a yellow hello, just to get the brothers in for my rellos, bellows. Yeah, you know my love is here, but I rap for my country, cause I'll always be my kid. Red room, now red roars, the blood of a soul. Red sunsets, and when it's going down for sure, make me mad and I'll leave your red blood on the floor. I bleed for my people, red blood to the core. Black, yellow, red, yeah, you heard what I said. If you starting on my mama, take it up, don't forget. Black history to this country, got a man step. Black, yellow, red, off the shirt of it, I guess.
My flag, yeah, it's always red, black, and yellow, yellow, yellow. Always was and always will be, but I'm always be rapping my country. My flag, yeah, it's always red, black, and yellow, yellow, yellow. Always was and always will be, but I'm always be rapping my country.
Kobe Rap, MC Mux, Black Folly Entertainment.
This is Paul Yanning, and you're listening to BBN 98.7 in Yidinji Land.
Calling me, pushing me.
Yes, it's gone pretty quick. Thank you to Bumblebee Pro Media 98.7 FM. And by the way, for journalists and reporters out there, you now can get for free a foreign press corps card, a Yidinji press pass, and all you have to do is email our government with your name, with your company or organisation. If you're a freelancer, then you can get a freelancer status and a passport style photo, and we, via the Yidinji Royal Post, can send you out your card. And that means you can report on our territory, because as Minister for Communications and Broadband, you know, we do believe in a free press, and we want to support all those things that journalists do. You know, the Yidinji society loves the storyteller, and it reveres the storyteller, because the storyteller is important to the society to pass on that knowledge, to give a true account of things that took place, songs, story places, dances, all that kind of stuff. Well, journalists sort of do that in a modern context, but we want to look after them and make sure that they don't have any problems with us telling them to report this way or that way, or, you know, we're going to lock them up for calling us a micronation or whatever. And that might happen. But, you know, I'm just joking there. But, you know, I think it's a wonderful thing. And we're trying to interact. I know that there are some big news agencies currently negotiating with us to have these things. And once that does take place, I tell you what, it's a win-win. That's all I can say.
Yeah, look, it sure is, but it all comes back to one basic thing, knowing who you are. You know, we're talking about New Zealand and Waitangi. Do those people down there know exactly who they are, the legal identity that they're seen through? How many of them do? You know, yeah, get the mask off your face. You know, people got to understand this stuff and understand that you are just a human that can be seen legally through an identity, you know, be whatever it is. If you're an Australian, you toe the line as Australian, obey all the Australian rules and do as you're told. So you've got these options to go to identities, you know, the ones that are legally created, and ours are created pursuant to our ancient old laws, the ones that have never gone away, the ones that haven't been seeded or extinguished. They're still here, the ones where you're the owner. Understand this, those people down there, the original tribes in New Zealand, still own that place. You know, it's not New Zealand's. It never was the British, by the way. So it's the same here. Know who you are. That's what I'm trying to get through to everyone. Know who this legal identity is. And if once you do that, then it really empowers you to go forward and create things like money, currency, legal tender, you know, stuff you wouldn't imagine possible anywhere at any other time.
Yeah, absolutely, Gunyara. And, you know, just to echo Morama's words, you know, the peoples, the first peoples of this continent, it's a beautiful thought that sovereignty hasn't been lost. You know, as much as Australia has, you know, put on a great play and faked it to this point, the truth is now out, and Yidinji showing the way. So, yeah, take note and hopefully re-establish your own sovereignty.
Yes, and I want to thank those people inside the Commonwealth of Australia that actually told the truth. And, you know, they left a trail there for us. You know, it wasn't given to us on a silver platter, but I think they had certain framework that they had to uphold as well. And there are some great Australians doing some great work to try and, I guess, bring the Commonwealth to the Yidinji table, and vice versa. We're doing this to look after everyone. Remember that. This is not about just us getting revenge or this kind of stuff. It's got nothing to do with that. It really is about this peaceful way of settling the past and securing the future. And we're doing it out of love. We're not wanting one Australian dollar for this treaty, you know. And I think that's really important to remind the world that money is not the be-all and end-all, you know. What's the point of having all that money in the world and then walking down the street and getting, you know, murdered because some homeless guy was, you know, trying to get some food or some money or something, you know. It's just... We should be helping people like that out. And that's what we're going to do with our central bank. We're going to help the poverty-stricken, the homeless. You can see in the city of Gimoi, it's on the increase. There's a lot of mob and white fellas, black fellas living on the streets. You know, we've got to take care of that. And the Yidinji Nation and the Yidinji Society wants to truly help. And it's through this government now that we've been part of, that can really push that and try and get those things done. But anyway, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to this program. And as a Christian, I can say in the mighty name of Jesus Christ, our Lord, may he give you patience and blessings, and look after you and comfort you wherever you are. Garu.
Stories, could you teach me some more? Tell you about the countries you've never been before. I'll go on forever, forever and a day, until you lose the interest, right then I'll walk away. So I won't let that happen, not while we're living free. I can be the poet, you can be the story. You can keep me grounded, keep me on my toes. I'll always be chasing you wherever you may go. And if you skip ahead and break away from us, don't run out of sight, I just might not catch up. But I won't let that happen, not while we're having fun. You can be the runner, but I can be the gun. I'll be waiting for you here. When you come calling, I'll be waiting.
your stories, could you teach me some more? Tell you about the countries you've never been before. I'll go on forever, forever and a day, until you lose the interest, right then I'll walk away. So I won't let that happen, and while we both belong, I can be the singer, you can be the song. I'll be waiting for you.
Miri Dora Gunagala Yela Dutteyo